I remember the first girl I courted, I guess, when I was 12, maybe. It was at a lake that my family used to spend a week at. We used to rent a cabin for a week. And the girl who was staying in the cabin next door, I had a really big crush on. And 11-year-old me didn't know how to make a move, to the point where when I was saying goodbye to her, my family started teasing me about, oh, you should go over and say, you know, goodbye. She's like expecting you to say goodbye. And I remember knowing that I should, but not wanting to do it in front of my family. And so
you walked up to her car as they were pulling out, knocked on the window,
right, right,
and gave her a here's looking at you, kid,
right,
Bogart like, move.
Well, it was kind of like a little salute with my two fingers by my eyebrow, just kind of like, I remember turning around from her car and seeing you guys, and you were all trying to contain yourselves, and none of you were doing a good job.
You didn't talk to a girl for about 10 years after that. Yeah. So mean.
It worked out, sort of. Not really. I'm single. I'm 41. Anyway, here's the show.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
And with me, as always, is my...
supportive.
Yeah, usually supportive.
Not then.
Christian Long. I think we're just following my... Not to blame it all on my parents, but you were following their lead.
Yeah.
And at that age, you're the youngest one. You're looking for reasons to get some power and tease me. And
sure.
And it was a perfect opportunity. And in all of your defense, what it must have looked hilarious.
Yeah.
Like embarrassment to the point of like, it's almost crippling. I remember that. Like it almost prevented me from making moves. And every move I made toward her car, I remember feeling like it was an accomplishment, you know, like, you know, when you can hear your heartbeat and it's the only thing you can hear, ta-dun, 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 going up to that car and like not having a fucking clue what to say, what to do.
Yeah.
To do it in front of her family, in front of my, oh,
it's
it
embarrassing.
Was so embarrassing.
Speaking of first crushes, is it fair to say that your first movie crush was Leah Thompson, our guest today?
Well, I think Leah Thompson was my first real meaningful movie crush. Like, I do remember being physically attracted to Carrie Fisher in Return of the Jedi.
So I know that's such a common thing. I never had a crush on adults when I was a kid. And to me, Leah Thompson, Carrie Fisher, they were grown-ups. I liked girls who are my age.
Did you have a crush on Annie, as I seem to recall, or Molly, the girl who played?
Yeah, but she was my age.
Yeah.
She was a kid. And third grade was the first time I liked a girl in school. But I never, I mean, I thought she was pretty, I'm sure.
You mean Annie?
Leah Thompson. Oh. But I never had a, had a thing for her when I was a kid because she was a grown up.
I don't want to, this is now going to sound creepy if I really get into the nuts and bolts.
Please don't really get into it.
Well, I just remember it was such an important moment in my life. Like in so many ways, discovering Back to the Future was like, I can't overstate how important it was in my development. That movie, like wanting to emulate Michael J. I thought Michael J. Fox, I still think that character, Marty McFly, is the coolest.
Yeah, he is the coolest. That really had a huge impact on you, more than a lot of people.
Yeah, to the point where...
You kind of sound like him.
I still kind of... even that, Doc, are you telling me my mom... Yeah, but you're so... I mean, I'm doing it right now with my hand. I still gesture like he does. It was profoundly important to me, that movie. And of course, Leah Thompson was, to me, she was the most beautiful, and it didn't get any better. And so it was very difficult. The challenge I faced was, in this interview, was somehow trying to separate, because in a lot of ways, we've talked about this a lot on the show, like we're still our childhood selves in a lot of ways.
Yeah. But you met her for the first time a couple years ago, right? Longer.
Leah, I met when I was doing a show called Ed. This is about 20 years ago now. I was 20, early 20s. And the guys who created the show also really loved Back to the Future, fetishized it in a way that I did. So they had as many people from that show on as possible. They had Thomas F. Wilson, who played Biff. They had Christopher Lloyd. I can't wait to tell this Christopher Lloyd story when we hopefully have Christopher Lloyd on. But and they had Leah. Leah did several episodes. And I remember at one of the rap parties dancing with her. We had a really fun dance.
Wow. Like an Enchantment Under the Sea dance?
It was Enchantment Under the Sea adjacent, I would say. Yeah. But it was, she is so fun and such an easy person to be around. And despite my kind of inability to hold back from like nerding out around her. And then years after that, we worked together on a movie that we talked about a couple of weeks ago called Literally Right Before Aaron. Leah played my mother in that, which was...
And I know I said this a couple of weeks ago in the Fran Drescher episode, but I think it bears repeating. Weird casting.
Yeah, I get it.
For Leah Thompson to play your mother...
The age thing is just... I couldn't get past it. She's just so much younger than my mother.
So
sorry, Mom.
So if anyone has not seen any of the three Back to the Future movies... You definitely need to turn this off right now and watch them.
Yeah.
But she was also, she's been in some other iconic movies, Some Kind of Wonderful and Howard the Duck, which I loved as a kid.
Oh my God. She married the director of Some Kind of Wonderful, Howard the Deutsch. I've been dying to make that joke.
And she was on the show Caroline in the City. That was the 90s, right? Mid-90s.
Yeah. All
it was
the
on
right
for
moves.
Like 100 episodes.
Iconic movies. Red Dawn. She was Space Camp. The list goes on. I even loved Jaws 3. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with those Jaws movies. We get into Jaws 3 a lot more than we should, probably. To me, she's an icon. She will forever be somebody that there's a part of me that will always kind of like love. I know it sounds weird, but she was like, yeah.
Like she was beyond a childhood crush. She was like a childhood love.
Yes.
It's like you had a relationship
yeah.
with her.
To say crush is too fickle. It's too like...
It's too fleeting.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I never got over it. And every time I watch that movie, holds up more than holds up. It still has that deep of an impact on me. I think it's the best movie ever made. And I think Leah is just the most lovely, wonderful woman God ever made. And if you think that's gushy, just wait till the interview. Coming up next, the sublime Leah Thompson.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
I don't know if it's more flattering to me or insulting to you that you played my mother. I was thrilled because as I'm going to talk about, I'll try to limit myself here. I'm just a huge fan enormous fan. To the point where I've been pretty, I've been getting more comfortable with these things and like talking to people, and I'm very nervous right now. But playing your son was surreal for many reasons. But I think the thing that I was struck most by was how wrong the casting was. And I told you this, I know, but I didn't want to be too creepy about it.
First of all, I am a huge fan of yours. Yeah. You are amazing. Yeah. You are an amazing actor.
We're cutting all this
funny,
out. Just so
funny,
you know.
Funny, funny. No, don't cut that. You're awesome.
That means really.
I was honored to be able to be your scene partner.
You grew up in Minnesota, in Rochester,
yes.
Minnesota. What did your parents do? What was your family, your upbringing like?
When I was growing up in Rochester, my dad was having a hard time selling life insurance. He wasn't very good at it because he was, you know, super uber honest.
Oh, that's a no-no.
And my mom was an artist, like a painter and an actress, and she was unfulfilled. And so it was an interesting, their marriage was kind of falling apart. My mom was drinking too much and my dad was drinking too much. And it was kind of a disaster, but I had four older brothers and sisters that kind of co-parented me.
Yeah.
My oldest sister is still my assistant, Colleen.
No kidding. did they shelter you somewhat from the dysfunction of your parents?
I don't think there was much sheltering. It was a very, I just went to visit the house in Rochester that I grew up in.
Oh, no kidding.
Two bedrooms.
What?
And the rest of us slept in the basement. And
Well, you have bunk beds?
Yeah, we had army bunk beds.
Oh my God.
Those metal army bunk beds and sheets. My brother's scores for Scrabble were still etched.
Get out of here. That's so cool.
In the wall. It was really.
So your parents, one of them lived there, continued to live there?
No, we moved to Minneapolis. You know, it was easier to be poor back then.
Yeah.
We were very poor, but we had a beautiful house, like a block away from a lake in Minneapolis that they bought for like $13,000. So that was like kind of lovely and idyllic and living by that lake. And
so they stayed together then?
No, they divorced when I was about eight.
Eight.
Mom sobered up and she died with 50 years in AA.
Oh,
which
my
is kind
God.
Of impressive.
Wow. Yeah. Wait, Leah, I'm sorry. How were you then able to get into the 2-bedroom house that you grew up in? It was just a new family lived there and you asked if you could check it out.
I just asked. And I was a little bit perturbed that they didn't know that Leah Thompson lived there.
Yeah, right?
I went to visit the other house in Minneapolis.
There should have been a plaque.
There should have been a plaque.
Truly. I'm not exaggerating. A bust.
She had no idea.
At least one bust.
I was like, come on.
Did she have a thick Minnesota accent? Was that an accent?
Oh, yeah, she had that. Oh, so, you know, that's why they let us in.
Oh, come on. What was it like? Did it bring up memories that, you know, that had laid dormant for a long, you know, really powerful memories? Yeah.
This recently, I went to give an award in Minneapolis and to raise money for this theater. That was the first theater that I ever performed in.
Oh, wow.
And then I went. This was the first time I went into the next house that I lived in.
Oh,
from the time
wow.
I was eight to the time I was 12, which was really an amazing house. And that lady did know that Leah Thompson.
Okay, all right. She had been told.
So she gave us a very.
She was like, where have you been?
I know. Guys, you're knocking on a wall of houses around. But she, that was very powerful.
I really
cried a lot.
I bet.
Because everyone's gone, you know, my mom and dad are gone. So I'm like,
God.
I think that's why certain things are so. Like, This Is Us is so powerful. The idea of seeing time.
Of course.
A room and different times.
Oh, my God. Like, of course. I'm so struck by it. And that's why Back to the Future is such a powerful story. And that's why it connects with people because it's about our, you know, ultimately it's about our mortality and facing the cruel hands of time, right?
Yeah.
Like, and what happened to you in that movie, it's interesting that you'd say that about your mom. Was that in any way triggering playing Lorraine at an older age? Because in the beginning of the movie, she does, it's clear she's drinking and playing it. Did you think, oh God, this is kind of my mom?
No, my mom wasn't like that at all. She was a really much more fun drunk.
Okay.
My mom was very, you know, she'd ride around the lake and jump in.
Okay.
You know?
She was a good time Charlie.
Yeah, she was really fun. She wasn't like.
She wasn't like your uncles that didn't get make parole again.
No.
Okay.
She wasn't dowdy, but I did understand that character, but I based her on other people that I knew, the older Lorraine.
Oh, really? And you've obviously never told them. It's not a very flattering portrayal.
No.
So 8 to 12, you're in this new house. And then at what point do you start doing ballet?
I was started ballet when I was like 11.
Okay. Did you have ambitions to act at that time or was it just ballet?
No, but I did my first play when I was 12 at the Children's Theater, which is kind of Minneapolis, which is like world renowned. It won the Tony a few years, like 10 years ago, 8 years ago. It was a really amazing theater. So I did Madeline the Gypsies when I was 12. So that was my first play.
So you loved it. This was what I wanted to do.
No,
really?
I still just wanted to be a dancer. I was actually loaned out. I was actually like given by my ballet company to the to the theater company because they owed money.
Oh, my
God. So I said, oh, you were you like, can borrow Leah Thompson to play the lead.
You were like collateral? Play.
I was like, okay.
So, and then it was, were you at ABT? Because you joined ABT, which is a very prestigious company. Were you there at this point?
No, later I went.
When you went to New York?
I went to Pennsylvania. I was in the Pennsylvania Ballet. I was an apprentice there and I didn't quite make it. So then I went to New York and I was in ABT too. And then I it was funny because then Baryshnikov told me I was too stocky and I walked out and I became an actor. I became a waitress.
I'll show you.
I'll become a waitress.
Wait tables. Do you think there's anything worse for a young woman's like self-image and female body image? Is there anything worse in the world of ballet?
Well, no. Ballet is really difficult. But this is an interesting thing that happened to me. I told you I was giving an award. I was to Misty Copeland.
Oh,
who's
sure.
In ABT.
ABT, yeah.
And she's the first principal dancer that of color in ABT. So I was there and I was talking to her and I was at, you know, a reception and there were all these ABT head honchos and they were like, you were in ABT too. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I was. And they were like, you were I remember you, you were a beautiful dancer. I was like, I remember Misha telling me I was too stocky and like me quitting dancing. And they were like, oh, that Misha.
Classic Misha.
Changed the course of my life. And they were like, classic me.
I just brushed it off.
But I was just so thrilled that they even knew the story and had like someone had even pretended to know that I was a dancer.
Also, I thank God that he had, that he did do that. That Mish.
Oh, thanks.
Thank God.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
And because the course of my life was completely changed in that moment.
Also, I mean, I think it worked out. Yeah. I mean that not only because of what happened as an actress, but what could have happened as a ballet dancer. I mean, that's a life that, you know, I wouldn't wish on anybody. Anyway.
I didn't have the body. I mean, you never went to the doctor, but I had, when I finally was an actor and I had the money to go to a doctor, when they x-rayed my back, my last two vertebrae thought they were part of my sacrum, so they didn't bend.
So
those extra two vertebrae that make your legs go up in the back and like make you, I just kept thinking I was a bad person.
I'm like a mutant.
If I was a better person, I could get my leg up.
Oh my God.
But it was my body.
Of course. And not only with the body image, but the pressure that must do to a person that age.
But
really
let me
unhealthy.
Tell you, it is a beautiful thing.
I know. It's beautiful to watch.
It's beautiful to do.
Yeah.
It's heaven.
Do you miss dancing? You were on Dancing with the Stars. Were you pissed you didn't win?
No, I wasn't pissed I didn't win, but they definitely need like 12-step program for people who've been on Dancing with the Stars.
Why? What happens?
It's
after?
Just a freaking nightmare.
Do you feel just like immediate pressure?
It's insane.
Oh, I wouldn't make the first round.
It's insane. It's so much pressure. Uh-huh. It's so insane.
Producers with headsets and like, okay, now you're up next. There's a lot of that, like backstage.
It's almost
chaos.
Worse than that. It's almost like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's almost like.
Now, Leah's making a very judgmental face, right? A very smug.
Yeah, like because they surprise you and they torture you and they decide way the game is going to go.
Oh, you're a pawn.
Yeah, you're a pawn in a game that, so it feels like the Hunger Games.
God.
It literally feels like the Hunger Games when you're in it.
Oh, my God. Well, that brings us back to ABT. Hello. How do you quit? As you were 18? 19.
I think I was a 20.
20.
20.
Oh, you were old.
I was old.
Were you crushed?
A little bit crushed, but I was all by myself. And I just remember going to my locker and going, that's it. That's it. And I, you know, just took my things and I just was like, that's it. I got to do something else. And it was upsetting to me kind of as a spiritual person. I've always kind of been a spiritual person. And I was like, why would the great spirit give me this desire to do something and not just enough talent to almost make it?
Well, he didn't
That's brutal.
That's hard to wrap your
feeling.
Mind around,
yeah.
Sure. But it wasn't enough, thankfully, for you to not pursue another visual art.
No, I didn't feel that way. Yeah. I didn't feel that way. I felt ridiculous at the time.
Right.
I mean, because he's stocky.
Yeah, let's face facts.
He's a stocky dude.
Yeah.
He's like short.
Right.
Like what? He's not like life. You know what I mean? It just felt ridiculous because I was like 98 pounds. There was no way I was getting any skinnier. I think he probably meant that my hips were too big or I wasn't tall enough.
They didn't clarify. I mean,
it was fine. Yeah. But what it was that the greatest dancer in the world was saying I wasn't going to make it. So, but it was good. I just was like, that's it. Like, yeah. I got to do something else.
You go wait tables. You're in New York now without any money.
No.
So what are you thinking now? What's the next step?
It was very interesting what happened after that. I was waiting tables and my cousin, Matthew Barry, who's now he was in Luna with Bertolucci.
Oh, wow.
And my uncle, PJ Barry, did a lot of commercials and he was a playwright. And they had an agent. A manager who actually managed Tom Hanks.
Oh, weird.
His name is Cy Maslow. And I went to Cy Maslow, and Cy Maslow was like, and he sent me downstairs.
Sounds like such a showbiz name.
He sent me Cy downstairs Maslow. To Sal Travis, a.k.a. Sal Colicchio.
Oh, my God.
Downstairs.
Like to the underbelly.
With a, you know.
Comb over.
Yeah. But he was a lovely man.
Stocky.
I don't know. But he also was awesome because he sang at weddings in Long Island.
What was
Island.
The name again? Sal?
Sal Colicchio.
Wow.
Really
great. Can't write that.
And he sang on the weekends. Uh-huh. So he had this like, hi, boys.
Amazing. Yeah.
And the whole bit.
Is it creepy or was it just like, it sounds.
A little tiny creepy. But nothing I couldn't handle.
Sure.
So he started sending me out.
He was no Mish.
No. He started sending me out on commercials, which I got the very first commercial I went out for.
Oh, wow.
Which
God.
Was Burger King.
Burger King. Do you remember what you had to do?
Oh, yeah. Well, because nobody in New York, they scoured the universe for someone who could say, aren't you hungry? And I had that in my hip.
Oh, yeah. Well, you had been probably a little hungry.
Aren't you hungry for Burger King? Good. And the Burger King was awesome because they had the best casting director in the history of casting directors, because there was actually a commercial with me, Elizabeth Shue, and Sarah Michelle Gellar, all in the same commercial.
No kidding.
Yeah, they had a good casting director.
Holy cow.
Elizabeth Shue and I used to have to do the same commercial. They were such dicks.
Weird.
That we would have to do the same commercial. They'd do 100 takes with me, then they'd put her in and do 100 takes with her and be
what?
Like, here's the better one.
Oh, my God.
We were so annoyed with that we were like, we're not even going to eat dinner here. We're going to go across to McDonald's.
I'll show you.
Scumbags.
How quickly then did it lead to Jaws? So Jaws 3D was your first. I love all the Jaws movies, but it's obviously, it's not the first one. So, but it's a big job. It's got to be exciting to get. Because it's like still at that point, right? That's like an event movie of the summer. What I heard you lied about the experience that you had as a movie actress. Was that it?
I lied in my resume.
Oh, okay. Well, everyone does.
I lied in my resume. But the weird thing was that like within 2 years of that being on my resume, they made both those movies that I lied about.
Oh,
so
really?
They were like,
wait a minute.
You were in Crossover? I was like, no.
Hold on. Did you just make up the title?
I just made up the titles of the movies and the whole bit.
You're like, Sophie's Choice.
Yeah.
What?
I was a bit psychic.
Yeah, wow. And do you lie about your water skiing experience?
Is that
true?
I lied that I could water ski. I lied that
great
I could
sequence.
Swim.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I can't swim.
And you're doing a lot of swimming. You're playing a research. No.
A ski bunny.
Like that's right. Bess Armstrong was the researcher with Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
You say you lied about swimming. Did that make you then nervous when you had to do that stuff? What gave you the confidence to do that? Was it confidence adjacent to the ballet confidence?
Yeah. Well, I had to do a 3-tier pyramid on water skis.
That's right. And then the shark starts chasing you guys.
Yeah. So there's 6 guys on the bottom, 2 girls on each of their shoulders, and 1 girl on top of each. So it's a double pyramid on water skis. And then we had to put it on the ocean in order to make the story work, because Orlando is not on the ocean, which where we shot it in SeaWorld. So we had to put that on the ocean.
And you shot where? You shot in Orlando.
Orlando.
Oh.
And that, I think that's why Dennis Quaid fell in love with me, because I was so awesomely butch that I could do these crazy stunts and not really know how to swim. You know, because I had been a dancer, I wasn't afraid to do the stunts. So they were smart. They were smart to hire me, because no one else could have done that.
Right. And back then, you talk about Dennis Quaid, there wasn't like that tabloid culture. So Were you able to be in relationships without feeling any sort of like scrutiny, public scrutiny?
Well, yeah. I mean, and he was kind of on and off again famous. Uh-huh. But he did really do a great job with teaching me how to be in Hollywood and how to be an actor. Like, I didn't know anything. I didn't know how to handle money. I didn't know how to handle work. You know, it was grim because he was married.
Oh.
That was that. He was married to PJ Souls.
Oh, that little bugaboo.
So I'm like a bad, bad child. Don't ever do this on, don't do this at home. Right. So yeah, it was very
hopefully
bad.
Your daughters stop listening after we shame them.
No, they won't listen.
Okay. Right.
But anyway, they know this story. It's,
okay,
a grim story, but it happens.
Well, listen, you're young and people, I mean, God, if I could, I'm so glad I'm not held accountable for so many things I did when I was that age. But also it's Dennis Quaid. You're doing a movie with him and come on.
Yeah.
Come on, whoever's judging this.
Yeah.
Let's see you not have a relationship with Dennis Quaid.
Uh-huh.
When the prime
when
of his.
You're 21.
Yeah, come on.
So, he's still got a washboard stomach.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Even Dennis Quaid now, I'd be hard pressed not to have an affair with.
You and a few other folks.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he was a great guy and he really taught me a lot about
how to avoid sharks.
How to approach acting, how to navigate Hollywood.
Were you enjoying it? I mean, like that experience, that's a big movie to do. Mm-hmm. Was it fun? Were you just on a pure fun level?
And I was scared because I didn't really know anything. I didn't know how to hit a mark and I didn't know anything. So I was scared. But it was nice because I had to just do these stunts all day. Like my rehearsal period was actually learning the Ski World ski show.
Oh, wow.
Which was, and I could still sing, come on down to the Tugport Holler. There's a feud going on, and don't you bother to bring your gun. It's feud on water twixt the Hatfields and McCoys. I started too low.
How the fuck do you remember that?
Who you for? It's really, really high art. But I learned the whole thing.
You ran out of breath.
I learned the whole thing. I
can't believe.
Suit.
I can't believe you remember that.
I could do the show.
Wow.
I did recently see that movie, probably maybe for the first time. The Meg was coming out.
Yes.
And they were showing both of them.
Uh-huh. It's
at
on
the
quite
Egyptian.
Often. Oh, at the theater.
In the theater.
Oh,
so
cool.
I sat through the whole thing.
What was that like? Had your kids seen it?
No, they haven't seen hardly anything I've done.
What?
Hardly anything.
You're kidding.
Mm-mm. Zoe told me she hasn't seen Back to the Future 2.
Get out of here.
Kind of a great movie.
Yeah, I almost threw the microphone over. Are you kidding?
I know. Well,
are you? Is that upset?
I didn't strap them down and say, watch mommy's movies.
Yeah. Like Clockwork Orange style.
Do, 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 shaboo.
As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
So you had done All the Right Moves.
Yes, I did All the Right Moves. That was the second movie I did.
With Jan DuPont shot that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, it was Jan's first American movie.
Wow. It's beautifully shot and kind of a precursor to Friday Night Lights. If for those of you who haven't seen it, it's about a steel town, very working class town in Pennsylvania, and Tom Cruise.
All the Right Moves is famous because Tom and I were naked in it. And
yes,
when DVDs came out, you could stop it at the perfect point when we're going in bed together and see his
private parts. I don't know about it.
And everybody got really excited about that.
Uh-huh.
But the movie is actually really, really good.
But so you didn't want to do the movie because of that, right?
I didn't want to take my top off.
And was it he that convinced you to?
No, he didn't have the part. We both had to screen test together.
Oh, really?
He had done Risky Business, but it wasn't out.
Hadn't come out. Okay.
So
he did Outsiders and Taps, and that's kind of...
Yeah, and he was also a little small to play a football player.
Right. Well, he's playing a defensive back, so you kind of buy it.
I mean,
still small.
I think it was kind of... I remember doing my last audition in New York with Vincent Spano.
Oh, huh.
And then he and Tom and I went... They flew me to L.A. to do the screen test at Fox.
Okay.
And we were both really nervous.
I bet. Had you met him before?
No.
But he wasn't like Tom Cruise.
No.
You were just nervous to be screen tested.
Yeah.
And
he was great. He has always been a really great guy, I think.
Yeah.
I think he's just he was always very polite and, you know, really worked hard. And he taught me all about music, kind of getting you into character. He would incessantly play Bruce Springsteen in our honey wagon.
No kidding. Oh, I can see that.
Just leave me alone.
You don't remember anything.
That's how he would get into character.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And those great songs were just coming out. I mean, Born in the USA was, I think, probably, or Nebraska was just out. Wow, that was pop music. That was, how cool. Then how does Back to the Future come around?
Oh, so I do The Wildlife with Eric Stoltz, and they're looking at him on the chem, which was this old thing that you had to watch movies on while you're editing it.
Uh-huh.
So they're looking at Eric Stoltz, and apparently I need to read the books.
Uh-huh.
There's like 900 Back to the Future books that I've never read.
Yeah.
So I don't
really might know more.
You might know more. I've never read the book. But as far as I know, they were like, who's that girl? Have her come in and audition. And for some reason,
yes,
I just really understood the character. I recently saw a
It's a very complex character.
Yeah, I really got that girl. And I've seen interviews and stuff. And I was obviously defending myself in the world because I was like talking like this all the time. Like I had to have this weird little voice. I was like, what is
that? You mean
that?
In the movie? Or
no, in real life.
Uh-huh.
I was like, wow. So somehow I figured out how to focus that sexy kind of little girl thing that I was doing with my voice.
Weird.
It is weird.
Yeah. I wonder why. I wonder if it was a way to protect yourself.
I think so. Huh. I think I was just trying to be cute because it would save me from having to know what I was doing,
yes,
which is not fair. Right.
Oh, she's adorable. Let's give her a pass.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That movie obviously is like, and I'm going to try to hold myself back, but it's easily my favorite movie and it's one that is so beloved universally for so many reasons. But what people I don't think give it enough credit for is the acting. I know that sounds kind of like, but I don't think people consider that enough. There's so many like wonderful elements of that movie and it just works in every way. But was the script, was it just diving into this script? Was it easy to bring to life? I mean, you say you work on it, you worked on it a lot. Was it?
I've seen the script recently. I found the script and I was like, whoa. That's impressive. Like there was a lot of work.
Oh, you found your old script?
Yeah, I found my Back to the Future script.
And was it all marked up?
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of work I did. But
because it is complex. I mean, you're going from, like you said, playing this, there's this sexy, but also young, like teenage, you're just becoming aware of sexuality. And then you're a woman who's kind of jaded and drinking too much. I mean, there's so many... God damn, and meeting your son, there's so many layers to it.
Well,
was it daunting?
What I think is, I mean, even when I was doing those Burger King commercials and talking like, I understood,
are you hungry?
I understood, I was a feminist growing up. I was very, I had a big spiritual life. I had a big political life. And then I was bottled in this Minnesota girl that people could see this way. And so I could see both sides. I could see.
Yeah.
Also, I was a dancer. I was a modern dancer.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't just like, ding, ding, ding. Right. I was like,
There was a sexuality in that.
Yeah, I grew up with this, like, you're giving birth.
Open.
You know, this kind of like, so.
I wish people would see this. You're doing an interpreter. You're doing a modern version. But it's very open and fluid.
And it's sexual.
Sexual, yeah.
Yeah. So I understood the dichotomy, the,
right.
Even when I did my Burger King commercials, I'd be like, at Burger King, we have some good news and some not so good news. Do you want a juicy Whopper and a fresh pickle? I knew exactly what they were selling. And
Get the AC going on?
I would joke about it.
No, I'm kidding.
But I understood it. And so I understood the sexuality and the play in the 50s. I understood, and I did a lot of work trying to understand, to speak my point of view about the 50s and what it did to women after the war and the stupid. I read all these magazines that were so stupid and I understood it. It was just like, you know,
it went from housewife.
In the 40s, like douche with Lysol and then your husband will love you. And like, you know, horrible stuff like that. Like if he doesn't love you, you need to clean more. And you know, all this crazy stuff, get a new blender and you'll have better sex. It was insane. It was insane.
And you guys get to comment on that and shine a light on how insane it is.
The propaganda was so, and I had stacks of those magazines that I read to just get myself, and then I would like sing Mr. Sandman all the time and listen to the crazy music. Yeah. To get into character. But you're right. The actors were really good and we were all doing really, really big characters.
Yeah. Yeah. But still grounded. All grounded.
100.
Yeah.
And the thing that I'm really most proud about is like, well, first of all, Crispin Glover was so genius.
I mean, that, just doing that laugh and with the cuts in that movie, but that's a bold choice. And then you come in with and you're like, wash. It's fucking brave.
Brave. Everybody was brave. Everybody was out there. And it was almost like a, for me, now that I look at it, it's almost like a kind of like a education in comedy styles.
Mm.
Everyone had a different style. And what happened was when Eric Stoltz was in it, he was doing Marty.
And how long did he film for?
Because 6 weeks.
6 weeks. Mm. How did you feel then when he, not only is he leaving this person that you've presumably come to know, but then all your stuff has to be, all these 6 weeks of your stuff has to be
reshot. The worst was that they left some of the shots.
Oh, right.
They left some close-ups and stuff. That was annoying. And the whole skateboard scene when with the manure and all that, they don't explain why all of a sudden Michael Fox has this different kind of costume on and slick back dark hair.
Right.
They did that to keep, and a stuntman that doesn't look like him. They kept all the stunts. The point being is that Eric Stoltz was a great actor, but he was doing a style that wasn't compatible.
Yeah.
He was trying to make a more natural film.
And they had wanted Michael J. Fox at the beginning, at the outset. And anyway, to say sitcom style is sounds insulting.
No, but what I feel like Michael did, his style was more like Buster Keaton.
Yeah.
He drew from the songbook of comedy, the spit takes, the falls, the double takes.
That spit take is just genius. Jesus, you smoke too? It's one of the best.
And the voice cracking and all the shtick he did.
Yeah.
And he planned every single shot. Like,
really?
Kick the skateboard up.
Yeah.
And how you unlock the door and how you slide across the car and all
Well,
that
that's
stuff.
From multi-camera, I'm sure, right?
No,
you don't think?
I feel like he got that stuff from deeper in the songbook.
Yeah.
You know, like deeper.
Chaplin.
Mm-hmm. Chaplin and all those people. And he wasn't afraid to do that. And a lot of actors would be afraid to.
Well, I hold him in as high esteem as I hold those guys. So I wouldn't surprise me. You steal from the best, right? I mean, he's the reason I wanted to be an actor. I've stolen so many things from him.
He's great. But it was a different style.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a different style than I was doing. It was a different style than Crispin was doing, Commedia dell'arte.
Yes.
He was like almost like a puppet.
That's
he did all
true.
These weird things.
Hey, yeah. Hey, you, it's very, Yeah, his body even. He's like a puppety. That's a good point.
He was a genius. In
genius.
That
what was it?
And same with Tom Wilson. Let me talk about how great Tom Wilson is.
Yeah, yeah.
As Biff.
And again, big. Hey, McFly! I mean, he's big and he's this presence. But real. How much of that was direction, too? I mean, would Zemeckis really encourage you to go for it?
Zemeckis was, I think he and that whole era, unfortunately, are a little bit afraid of actors. But I don't know why. I don't think we're that scary. But I think that he would just say, like, louder.
Yeah.
Louder. Yeah. And he did, you know, they cast it really well. They cast everybody and just set, you know, commitment. See, this is what I think about acting right now. When I watch acting, and I'm directing a lot now, mm-hmm. and when I'm talking to actors, I just want to say deepen it. Just deepen it. Mm. You don't have to do anything but deepen it. Like, go to the next level.
And does that mean feel it a little more, like sit with it a little bit more?
Yeah, like don't yell at me. Find a reason to yell at me. Yeah. I'm hurt. I need something from you. I feel depressed. You know, just
totally.
So many actors are just like on top of the thing.
Yeah.
But we were to deepen every single thing. Bob Zemeckis knew that so many massive plot points rested on our acting.
Right.
Like when I remember him being so nervous about the kiss scene when I go, it's like kissing my brother.
Yeah.
Because he knew that I had to be like, and then like, boom, completely change into another person.
And it is. That's a good example of something that a pivot that you have to make as mm-hmm. an actor to go from you want this guy so badly to go from you're overcome with, you know, and then right away, it's like kissing my brother. What are you? Is that a scary scene to get into? Is that
when you can tell they're scared?
Yeah.
There were, and then, but you know, Crispin, you know, after he punches him, and he goes, you know, and for us to have to like,
are you okay?
Fall in love in one shot.
Oh my God! Of course,
it's like so. But they gave us the great music and the great light. I mean, the way they lit me.
It's beautiful. Did you get the sense while you were doing Back to the Future? Was there? I mean, I'm sure you've been asked this 1,000 times, and it's probably hard to answer. But was there any sense? Of course, Spielberg was involved, and Zemeckis had done, you know, big movies, but. Did you get a sense that this would be a game changer? Certainly not that it would last. There would be Comic-Con. There'd be conventions about it one day. But like, are you thinking while you're doing it, fuck, this is a shot?
I think I was thinking it was a great part. Yeah. I knew that it was a great part to be able to play those different levels.
Yeah.
And I think it would, you know, it established that I was actually an actress, like a good actress. And so no matter what, through my career, once people want to put me down, I can go, no, dude.
You look at this.
I played this part. Like,
yeah,
I was really good.
This is integral to cinema history. So go fuck yourself.
Yeah. And it wasn't just like I was the girlfriend. Like, it was twisted and demented, too, which I appreciated.
And that's part of its endurance, too, I think, is that people, you know, there is that element, too, that's like, pretty fucked up.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
it's
when you unpack
weird.
It. maybe that's why your daughters haven't seen the second and third one.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's probably it. Yeah. I've kissed a lot of frogs and stuff.
Yeah.
And done a lot. They get very upset when I kiss other people. They did when I was young.
My mom did an Entenmann's commercial once, and I remember the kids teasing. She was in bed with another guy, not my dad, and they were dreaming about apple strudel or whatever, you know. And then they're like, "Oh, but it's raining out. I really want to go to the store." And then you cut to her running outside in the rain, and the kids at school were they were like, "Ha ha! I saw your mom in bed, you know, on TV in bed with a guy." And I didn't get, you know, I was such a late bloomer. I didn't get I didn't understand why. And a couple of years later, I realized, oh, they were teasing me about, you know, her being with some other guy.
But, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's so sad.
My kids used to both, like, burst into tears because they were really little when I was doing Caroline in the City. And it was, you know, guy of the week. There was always a new
that's
guy.
That's right. And Caroline can't figure it out.
No, she's just...
all over the map.
Yeah, so it was always kissing a different guy and they'd be like, ah!
Oh, no. Well, no wonder they only saw one episode of that. Then.
Yeah.
Right after Back to the Future, you alluded to this earlier, you did Howard the Duck, which... Mm-hmm. At the time, was a box office failure, but has since gained cult status. I think it's a really good movie. It's a really fun movie to the point where, you know, they're remaking it. Mm-hmm. Did you know? You know, Kevin?
I don't know. Kevin's doing the animated.
Oh, maybe
animated.
Kevin was. Oh, okay. All right.
He's animating it.
Well, still.
I'm trying. I went and pitched Marvel a different version of Howard the Duck.
Yeah, they're doing all these comics. So that at the time was like a Dark Horse underground comic, right?
Yeah.
But it was supposed to be, it's your move after Back to the Future. So you must be thinking this is like.
Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted the part. I got to play a rock star.
Yeah.
It was George Lucas.
You were like Joan Jett. Yeah.
And it was, you know, a big Universal movie.
Right.
And
was it tough?
But you know, it still made $48 million.
Wow. And then at the time, that's pretty.
That made its money back.
Yeah. Wow.
It's not the big bomb.
Yeah.
It was definitely a critical failure, but,
yeah. But it wasn't this like flop that people
thought. No, at the time, I think my boyfriend Dennis had a movie, I think, called Enemy Mine. That
this is Dennis Leary.
Dennis Quaid.
All right, no, I'm kidding.
I think it was called Enemy Mine. And I think that movie cost the same amount and made like $0. Like, that's a real bomb.
That's a bomb.
That's a bomb.
Did you guys talk about that?
I'm still surprised because I looked it up and it made like $48 million, and that's a lot of money.
It was to the point where it was remembered years later. I mean, they just released
it in Blu-ray.
Yeah, well, it's a good movie.
They
it's
don't
like,
do it if it, no one's watching.
Exactly. So take that, Enemy Mine.
Yeah, take that,
Dennis Quaid.
Everyone, I have no problem with Dennis.
The whole Quaid family. Yeah,
I have no problem with Dennis. It's just that it's so maligned. And actually, at a certain point, I got so sick of it. You know, people going like doing interviews and being like, I have to ask you about Howard the Duck.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, fuck you. And because so many people
I wish I'd said it that way. I have to ask you about Howard the Duck.
I'm sorry, but I have to ask you.
My producer would be so mad if I didn't ask. Sorry.
As if I'm going to shrink away.
Yes, and be shamed. Yeah.
I'm at the Comic-Con.
Yeah, you know.
And people
You got
love
your finger
me.
On the nerd pulse.
I do. I have my finger directly on the nerd pulse, yeah. And they love Howard the Duck.
Yeah, yeah.
So fuck y'all.
So take that, non-nerds.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled BABBEL.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply. If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
Hello, hello again, shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
And now Some Kind of Wonderful, this is post Back to the Future. Was that a script that everybody thought, oh, this is going to be something special? Did you know of Howard Deutsch?
No, I didn't. But I did know of John Hughes, and I always wanted to get in his movies.
Right.
You know, everybody.
Was that like, yeah.
Yeah, that was the in crowd.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Brad Pack or whatever that
yes,
was.
Yes, that's right.
And everybody wanted a John Hughes movie, and he would never, you know, I always auditioned for him and never got them. But it was an interesting story because Howie wanted me for.
This is Deutsch, not the Duck.
Yeah,
I just want to clarify.
Deutsch, yeah. And he didn't direct Howard the Duck.
Uh-huh.
That was Willard Hike. Howie wanted me for Some Kind of Wonderful, and it was a different script.
Huh.
And I said no. And then Howie left the movie and Martha Coolidge took over.
Hmm.
And the script got rewritten. And then Martha Coolidge left and Howie came back.
Do you remember why you didn't want to do the first incarnation?
Because I could tell that the other part was better.
Okay.
And I had Howard the Duck coming out.
And you, yeah.
So
you were set.
I was set.
You didn't need to go slum it with Howie Deutsch.
No. So then Howard the Duck came out.
Uh-huh.
Howard Deutsch came back.
Right. You're like, let me look at this Amanda Jones thing again.
Exactly.
So when you're working with Howard, is it right away? Do you guys fall for each other? It's just.
No. He had a crush on me.
Uh-huh.
There's a painting in the movie that's a plot point.
Yes,
and
yes.
And so he had like 12 of them painted because none of them were good enough. So that's when I knew he had a crush
Wait
on me.
Wait a minute. Crush borderline. That's a nice way of saying what he had.
But at this point still, I was engaged to Dennis Quaid.
Oh, wow. You were with, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I was
that.
Still with
wow.
him. So so I had to kind of get out of that before
yeah.
Before, but it was a crazy time. I mean, I did like 900 movies in a row.
God, yeah. How do you maintain anything when you're working?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
I did 900 movies in a row. But what happens is it all screeches to a halt when you have a baby. And this
right.
is, I want to do the research on this because mm-hmm. once you push a baby out,
yes,
you can't be a movie star anymore.
Is that a scientific fact?
Well, let's do the research.
Uh-huh, okay.
The only Meryl Streep is the only one.
I was just thinking of Meryl Streep. Yeah. She pushed a couple out.
Yeah, yeah. You can adopt a baby.
Oh, Charlize.
And Halle Berry
right.
and Sandra Bullock.
That's an interesting theory.
But once you actually create a placenta,
uh-huh,
you can't be a movie
it.
Star anymore.
They don't take your SAG card necessarily,
no.
but it's your movie star card.
Yeah. Take. It's does your face change that much or what happens?
That's interesting.
I never did a movie after that. A starring role. I did the Beverly Hillbillies. After that, I have never done a big feature.
Isn't that crazy?
The Beverly Hillbillies.
You do Back to the Future 2 and 3 at the same time.
Yes.
That's in like 89
yeah.
time. And when you're doing that, did he know at the time, or this is a couple years later he found out about his diagnosis?
It was later.
It was later. Okay.
I mean, I don't know when he did.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
According to his book, I think it was during Doc.
See, you've read the books.
I've read many of the books. I'm a big nerd. I can't believe I'm not at those conventions. So, interesting. And do you, at the time, is it frustrating? It's like, what's going on? I've done these,
yeah.
I'm in these big movies.
Yeah, it's still frustrating.
Yeah.
I mean, I still can't believe it.
Yeah.
But luckily, there's TV.
You do start doing TV in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And Carolyn in the City is a huge hit.
Yeah.
So, what was that just did you miss doing movies or was it like, this is comfortable. I'm raising kids. This is sweet.
I found sitcoms to be very, very traumatically hard.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, not so much so as some other actresses I've heard of that like threw up every time, but it's very...
in front of the live audience?
Yeah. You know, just the process of doing a live play every week
right.
with the pressure of like telling the jokes like boom, boom, boom and
yeah.
not being able to screw up because if you screw up, they're like get really mad at you.
Really? Oh, you could do another take, no? With multicam stuff?
I don't know. Have you never done it?
I have. And I definite pressure because it wasn't my show and I'm just mm-hmm. coming in as a guest star. But you're an ABT. Like talk about pressure like that. You can't mess up. That's like you got to be fucking fearless to
yeah.
do that. So how does that person... How does that not kind of like transfer over to the sitcom?
You know, some people have a different experience. I think my show was, first of all, we had the best time slot ever on TV between Friends. Thursday night between Friends and ER at the peak
right.
of their time.
Yeah,
between and mm-hmm. Friends. So it was literally the best time slot
mm-hmm.
ever. So that was a lot of pressure
I bet.
On me. And there was also this horrible kind of sexist pressure. Deserved or not deserved, because there was Sybil, There was Roseanne, and there was one. There was another show.
Mrs. With, Belvedere.
No, with a woman.
Yeah.
That sitcoms, three sitcoms with women that were
Veronica's
very
Closet?
No, it was Brett Butler.
Oh, Grace Under Fire.
Yeah, maybe. And those women were very difficult, all three of them.
Oh.
Very difficult.
Roseanne was?
Oh,
I'm
no.
Just kidding.
They were all very difficult.
Uh-huh.
So they were trying to like kind of keep a lid on me, even though I was like the nicest person ever. I was
God.
I have already had a career.
Yeah, stop
I'm
being
not
paranoid.
I'm not going to turn in a nightmare.
Don't project your shit about these other people onto me.
So they were like kept a real lid on me. And
right. They
were like, you stay in your place. And
oh, my God. How would that manifest itself?
It just stay in your place. Just stay in your lane and just don't screw up. Don't misbehave. Don't, I had two little kids at home. So, but for me, some people experience sitcoms as being much easier than I did. It was a lot, but I did 100 episodes of that.
God, you got to be proud of that.
Yeah. I love that show.
These are quick. These are just going to be quick. What's your favorite emoji? Your go-to emoji?
Tear coming down.
Tear. Okay, not going to touch that, but that's the truth. Tear coming down, your favorite emoji. That is making me cry inside. If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play and why?
Be a skater, figure skater. Is that a professional
athlete? Yeah, sure. I think so. Figure skaters make money doing escapades.
Looks and
stuff.
So beautiful. But
Tanya Harding became a big...
Yeah.
If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Doritos.
Which, Nacho or Cool Ranch?
Nacho.
Okay. Neil Patrick Harris said the same thing. And then I said, what about Cool Ranch? He said, oh, no, that makes your breath stink. I was like, well, Nacho is not.
The
doesn't
whole
make
thing
the,
makes
yeah,
your breath stink.
Nacho, you don't have minty fresh. What's your favorite movie of all time?
Harold and Maude.
Still?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh. I bet you're, yeah, okay.
That's... Well, Cat Stevens, too. I mean, because he did the whole score.
Yes, God. You mean Yousef Islam. On this show, we say Yousef Islam.
Good,
out of respect.
Good. Out of respect.
As-salamu alaykum. Other than L.A., where would you most want to live?
Montana.
Well, Atlanta. Oh, Montana. Do you guys go there?
Yes, we have a double wide.
Oh, wow, really?
I bet you don't have a double wide.
I don't even have a single wide.
A double wide.
Well, where's your double wide? It's in private, nice park.
My double wide is by Flathead Lake.
Oh, my God. You fly fish?
No.
Okay.
There's no trout in my river. It's all walleyes.
That pike.
Some damn Minnesotans introduced them.
Oh, gosh. They're invasive, don't you know?
They are invasive. They eat all the trout.
I bet. And they crawfish. Crawfish. That's Louisiana. They did, really? Is that true?
Yeah,
the walleye?
It's true. But they're good eating.
They are good eating.
They fight you.
Yes. Yeah. They're pike, right? Pickerel. Mm-hmm. They're real bony, no? Walleye?
No.
No. Okay. we went down
a little
tributary.
Nine aside.
If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, whom you've never met before, that's a tough one.
Oh, yeah. Those are three people?
Yeah.
It would have to be Albert Einstein, William Shakespeare, and Barack Obama.
Oh, my God. Second person in a row. That's great. I mean, what a great group.
When someone said that group? Exactly.
No. No one said that. But it was the second Obama. Who's your favorite Muppet?
My favorite Muppet? Probably Cookie Monster.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Cookie Monster used to bother me because I couldn't understand why only some of the... This is how young I was when I was watching. I thought,
why then? The cookies
fell out?
The
cookies just kept falling out. Like, you love cookies so much, most of them are falling out of your mouth. Just pick them up. Oh, you're so preoccupied with talking about how much you love cookies. They're all right in front of you, all these, like, big crumbs.
Not a real person. You can't really eat.
Right. I learned that about 2 years ago.
Huh. But I'm confused because when I was pregnant with Zoe, who's mm-hmm. my second child, I told Madeline that I was really worried, and I said, Madeline, I have a baby in my stomach. And she went, oh, that's Zoe. And
what?
I was like, what? And so later the next day I said, so who's coming? She goes, it's Zoe. Zoe's coming. So I
what?
I know. So I named her Zoe. But
weird. She had the prophetic title thing that you had when you were naming fake when you were padding your
exactly,
resume.
Exactly. But I always wonder if she named her after Zoe, the character on the Muppets. There's a Zoe character.
I did. Oh, a later one with red hair. Maybe?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But I don't know. I don't know. I don't. I,
so she said that, and you were like, oh, Zoe's a nice name. Yeah. Zoe, such a nice name.
I just
such
hope it's a
nice
girl, because a boy named Zoe would be rough.
It's like that scene in Back to the Future, and you're like, Marty, such a. Zoe, such an interesting name.
Such an interesting name.
Yeah. If your parents ever, if you ever have a kid, and one of them, when he's 8 years old, accidentally sets fire to the living room rug, go easy on him.
Oh, you're good.
Okay. Believe me, I'm going to, it's a good thing you don't have any more time because I'm going to, if you could be one age for the rest of your life physically, what would you pick?
32.
Camping or glamping?
Camping.
Dogs, cats?
Dogs.
Beatles, Stones?
Stones.
Really? You were the second person who answered with so emphatically.
Oh, I love the Beatles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you weren't as emphatic as Wolfgang Puck said, without missing a beat, Stones, as if he hated the Beatles.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That's our theory, is that Wolfgang Puck hates the Beatles.
Some people do.
Who hates the Beatles?
I know.
Assholes.
How could you?
You gotta be a, you gotta be, you gotta be a soulless.
But I like rock and roll.
That's, yeah.
I like, for some reason, I just like makes me just much harder. I like, that's the kind of yeah. music I just like to get like.
Bluesy, like sexual.
That's that's the kind of dance.
I remember dancing with you once at a, because we did Ed together.
Right,
and
right.
we had a, such a fun, it was so
it
fun
was so
dancing
fun.
With you. If you look under your seat, I'm going to grab it for you. This you don't have to do. You don't have to do it. And this is only to satisfy, this is
I'm
selfish.
Happy to do anything.
It's very selfish. But this is a scene where Marty first meets Lorraine. I've totally shanghaied you here. This is a scene where Marty meets Lorraine as a younger Lorraine for the first time. And I was reading it today, and it struck me that a lot of you guys must have definitely changed things. Or was it improvised? And I want to ask about, like, certain lines, like line by line, if this was, if you remember this being, I think this is the original script.
Really?
He wakes up and he says, Mom, is that you?
Shh, everything's going to be all right.
God, what a horrible nightmare. I dreamt I went back, way back in time.
Take it easy now. You've been asleep for almost 9 hours.
It was terrible. It was a terrible place to be. Now, this is new, right? This is old. I don't remember this. This must have been cut. The music was awful. They didn't have rock. The cars were ugly. My neighborhood hadn't been built yet, and everything was so weird looking.
Well, you're safe and sound. Back where you belong in good old 1955.
1955? Oh, my God. You're my mom.
My name's Lorraine.
Yeah.
Lorraine Baines.
Yeah, but you're so thin.
Just relax, Calvin. You've got quite a bruise on your head.
Ha! Where are my pants?
Over there. It used to be on my hope chest.
Yes, on my hope chest.
Maybe I made that up.
I wondered.
I've never seen red underwear before, Calvin.
Now, obviously, everyone knows you changed the purple.
I've signed a lot of purple underwear.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sometimes on people.
No.
Yes.
Where on the band? You got to go high as possible, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gross.
I know.
So I wonder if that was a prop thing. They didn't have red underwear. Or Calvin Klein didn't make red underwear. I've never seen because we now know it's purple.
This was an interesting scene to do because I had to kind of pretend to be that voice, you know?
Oh, in the beginning, that's right.
I had to try to kind of...
As he's coming out
and then
of...
I had to be like, when I turned around, I had to... It took a long time to get this right.
Why are you calling me Calvin?
Oh, my God. That's your name, isn't it? It's written all over your underwear. That's your name, Calvin Klein. It's written on your underwear.
This is new, right?
Oh, I guess people call you Cal. No, I said that.
I think you did, yeah. Okay. Actually, people usually call me Marty.
Well, I'm pleased to meet you, Marty. Oh, that's Marty. I think I said Calvin.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Well, because
Marty Calvin, I think you said Marty.
This is
definitely
a scene that I shot with Eric.
Oh, it is. Oh,
this is like one of the first times I worked with him. Mind if I sit here?
No, so now this is different. In the script, it just says, no. Gulps nervous. But of course, we now know he goes, and it's brilliant. He goes, no, good, good, great, good, good. I mean, it goes on. He's, yeah.
That's quite a bruise there.
Ha! And then he falls, yeah.
Lorraine, are you up there? It's my mother.
Oh, my God. I used it. Oh, my God.
Put your pants back on. Originally, it was his underwear that were on
the Hope chest. I wonder if you made Hope chest. It's such a great line.
I think so. I think, I don't know. No, I think, see, one of the things I loved about this movie was how much joy Bob Zemeckis had doing it.
Oh, interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How much joy he had. Laughing and
I bet
that's what I remember. That was so profound to me. How much I wanted to please him. How much joy and how fun it was to see his shots and how he shot. And it stuck with me as a director.
I bet
the way he filled up every single shot with story.
Yes,
you know what I
mean.
Yes,
every moment, every element was important for the story advancing.
Yeah, and when you watch the movie, it's really slow in the beginning, but he's telling the audience, "Watch this stuff, and it'll pay off." Because that joke when I set it up, your Uncle Jailbird Joey didn't make for all.
Yeah, you need to see the cake. You need to remember the cake.
And it's like 40 minutes later where the punchline is.
So you're my Uncle Joey. Better get used to these bars, kid. That's right. You're right.
It's 45 minutes from setup to joke.
Wow. That, again.
Brilliant.
Brilliant and brave.
Brave.
Do you think about things like legacy and when I think about the movies, even when I watch old movies I've done, it's a good reminder of like a time in my life that it's nice to be reminded of. Do you feel that? Do you think about things like that, like legacy and permanence?
I see it in real life when I see these like little kids that are like, what's really nice is doing these panels, because I've been doing panel with Chris Lloyd and Michael Fox and Tom Wilson. And so what's great is that we don't have any problems with each other.
Yeah.
We all still love each other. There's no problem. And
I could cry. It makes me so happy.
We just laugh. And you should see Tom and Chris together. I wish they would televise some.
I know.
Because they're so funny.
I know.
And lately we've been doing it with James Tolkien, who played the principal.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
Everyone's super funny.
Didn't that guy ever have hair?
He looks the same.
He does, really.
So does Chris.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, because Chris was an older version of him.
They aged him. Yeah. And they're doing a musical now. So, yes, they're doing a musical.
Oh, boy.
So I think, you know, all the people who want Back to the Future 4, they might get the musical and the musical movie.
When I worked with Christopher Lloyd did an episode of Ed, I bugged the shit out of him. I really restrained myself with you, if you can believe it. That was me restrained when we worked together. I was like, I waited till, you know, we had been working for a little bit. But Christopher, I just like followed him around. And at one point I remember him saying, Gigawatt, I don't remember the line. One point, I don't know. And he kind of gave up on but
he 100% has not read any of the books. He doesn't remember anything.
It must be so weird to him that people show up.
I know.
Yeah, but they do, because it's a part of our lives, and it's such an important part of my life. And so, if you had told 7-year-old me that I would be talking to you about this, and I roped you into doing the scene, his 7-year-old little head would explode. So I can't thank you enough for doing this.
I didn't do it for well. I wouldn't cast me as Lorraine.
I surprised you. I put you on the spot. And I stepped on one of your lines, too. It's like I'm going to talk about regrets. I'm going to be thinking about that for days.
Okay. It's all good.
You're the best. And they say don't meet your heroes, you know. And I'm so glad when I met you and we worked together, I'm so glad you turned out to be as kind as you are. And I'm like going to... I'm going to cry. I thank you so much. I'm so glad Baryshnikov told you were stocky.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Mish.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
Here.
This was a thrill. And
thank you, my friend.
Doc, so that happened.
Oh, my God.
So that happened.
I think over the course of that interview, you may have said every single line in Back to the Future. I mean, obviously all out of order and out of context. But you got most of them.
You know, when I roped her into doing that scene, when it was happening, it didn't register as being as embarrassing as it was when I heard it back.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I was embarrassed, but hearing it back, like, oh, because it had been... I think we got into a really comfortable groove with one another, and then to like, I broke it and was like, under your seat, you'll find a scene.
That was kind of nerdy.
No.
But you know, I obviously knew what a thrill that was for you. So I enjoyed listening to that. But, you know, I think in the show, there's a pretty good balance, I would say, of what we get from it and hopefully what an audience gets from it, the show,
Yeah.
And that you asking her to read that, I think, was an example of, like, that was for you. You know right. what I mean? But I do think it was still really fun to listen to, but it was like, yeah, that was for you.
That was a little...
But I'm glad you got to do that.
I am...
That must have been such a thrill.
As selfish as it was, and I agree with you, I think that probably was... I don't know if it alienated people, but it probably wasn't the most entertaining thing.
No, it totally was. But your intention right. was not to entertain.
No,
your intention was to do something yes. that the 8-year-old version of you
yeah.
would have loved to do.
Yeah.
But it ended up being entertaining for me at least.
It's good. It was one of the best moments of, you know, those moments that you'll remember, that just surreal.
Yeah. Oh, but just hearing her voice.
I
wasn't there, so I didn't get to meet her, sadly. But so I just listened to it back, and hearing her voice was so strange, because there's something so familiar about it to me, just I've seen that movie so many times.
I know.
And it's so warm and loving. And I thought, there's comfort. It's comforting.
Yes.
And yeah. I thought, you know, when she plays the old version, like middle-aged
yeah.
Lorraine in Back to the Future, she had a sort of like boozy, kind of sad quality to her voice.
Your uncle didn't make parole again.
But her voice now sounds so much more like young Lorraine to me
it does.
Than middle-aged Lorraine.
It must be strange for her to have seen a potential older version of
right.
herself.
Well, it's also a credit to her performance.
Yeah.
That
she made that real.
That was real. a real choice, that voice.
I never thought about that in that scene, the scene that we did, what an acting challenge that must have been to go from old Lorraine.
Because you needed to be tricked by the voice, you know, that like older voice. And then he wakes up and he says, "You're my mom." I mean,
yeah.
And then it's like the young version of her.
That the whole part. I mean, she talks about it a lot, thankfully. But what a challenge that was.
It's weird. As much as everyone knows I love the movie, understatement. It never really occurred to me until I talked to her. What a huge challenge that must have been. What a difficult role. All of those parts.
I mean, the first few minutes of the interview, you were. I mean, no surprise. You came across as very giddy and nervous. And so consequently, I think you steamrolled her a little bit at first. But then you definitely eased into it. You relaxed into it. I mean, I know how excited you were. Yeah. So it's actually, it was actually restrained for what it could have been.
It could have been a lot weirder and... You know why I think? Because we'd already worked together. And I think had it not been for the fact that we worked together spent a couple of days with one another. And she had some insight into what a fan I was when I also roped her into doing this video bit for I put on Instagram. I got to put it on Instagram.
And you've been showing up at her house a lot lately. So she's just used to seeing you.
He's a peeping Tom.
Oh, God. Oh, that's one line you didn't get to.
No.
Now you did the whole thing.
Okay. Lorraine, another one of those kids got in front of my car again.
That story, that Baryshnikov story is crazy.
Crazy.
Said she's too stocky. But thank God. I agree. You said that. You're like, I'm so glad he told you were too stocky.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God he was whatever you would call someone who would call her stocky.
Yeah.
Not a misogynist, just a body shamer.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole
world. It's not much better.
No.
He's not a misogynist. He's a body shamer.
I mean, that whole world.
I mean, it might be both.
But it's, you know, it's remarkable that getting that gut punch from that guy.
I know.
And she was able to pick
up
the pieces. And
keep her down.
I would have folded.
We've talked about this a lot. Like the resilience of these people is so impressive.
And I think you kind of need some of that in order to make it where they've made it. I mean, there's something.
That's why I wish I had asked her this now, but I wonder if she hesitated to encourage her kids to get into acting, just knowing, you know, how fraught with rejection it is, and how she, although once she did become an actress, I know she waited tables for a while, but it sounded like things started happening pretty quickly. And you think, how could they not? I mean, she downplays this a lot, but like, she is a really talented actress. I mean, she's a real, and she just was such a charming
screen. I don't want to get into it.
Yeah.
I've done enough.
I love when she slips into her Minnesota accent. And I love that accent.
I know.
I've always loved that accent.
Have you ever been to Minnesota, Minneapolis?
I have.
It's a great city.
In Edina, which is, don't you know?
Oh, sure.
It's a suburb of Minnesota.
I really love
Minnesota.
Me too.
Harmar, who does our theme music for the show, is famous in Minnesota.
Yes. In fact, he named himself after a mall, the Harmar Mall, right?
Yeah. I love the accent. I love how you obviously copy it instinctively, like you do with all the guests when they have a cute accent. Is it condescending to say it's cute?
I was wondering that.
I don't know. Maybe.
To say it's cute.
About an elder?
Is it patronizing? To say she's an elder?
Well, she's older than me.
But to say an elder.
I'm not saying she's like a tribal elder. She's elder than me. I'm not saying she's old.
No, I know. I know. It's sticky, though.
It is sticky.
Cute. It is.
I find it patronizing. And this doesn't apply to her, but I find it patronizing in general when people refer to really old people as cute.
Me too. He's like, I think Yoda is cute. I think most people would agree that Yoda is cute.
But Yoda's a fictional character.
No, I know. But I'm thinking.
That's like, the thing. I do think a lot of old people are cute. Like I would internally describe them that way. I would never say it. Because I think that it's just something condescending about that.
Remember when we met, I had met him, but Danny DeVito,
he was cute.
But
I wouldn't say that to him.
No, I think it'd be rude.
When she told you that her daughter.
Wallace Shawn is cute too.
I wouldn't say that to him either.
I know.
When she said that her daughter hasn't seen Back to the Future 2, I thought your head was going to explode.
I
thought you were going to start throwing equipment. Your voice became distant for a second and you were like, what?
What?
It was really funny.
I got really incredulous. I got not mad. I was just stunned. It's like, I don't know. It's like Julia Roberts' kid not having seen Pretty Woman. Like,
I haven't seen Pretty Woman, but I'm not
Julia Roberts' kid.
But I only say that because I've gotten so much shit over the years for not having seen that movie. That's like, wouldn't you say Pretty Woman is the one movie that people are always like, you've never seen Pretty Woman?
Yes, that's one.
Constantly. I should just see it. But, you know, now it's sort of like
Dirty Dancing.
Badge of honor that I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I'm like proud that I haven't seen it.
You know, Dirty Dancing is like that for me a little bit.
You've never seen that?
See?
No. I'm not mad at you.
There's a tinge of judgment.
I can't believe how casually she admitted to having an affair with Dennis Quaid.
I know.
And your reaction to it was really funny. Like, not only did you approve of it, but you were encouraged. You were like, oh, I mean, Dennis Quaid. Like, are you kidding?
Well,
he's gorgeous.
Well,
not
to talk more about looks, but like, I also fetishized his looks. He was
the coolest.
He was so cool.
Inner Space. Dennis Quaid in Inner Space.
Okay. But if you guys haven't seen the movie Inner Space with Martin Short, Meg Ryan, in her prime, like such a charming performance.
If you're a superficial person and you've never seen that movie,
and you like comedy,
you are you've wasted a lot of time.
I know we said this in the beginning about Back to the Future, but I wouldn't say stop the beginning of this episode to see Inner Space, but stop it now and watch Inner Space. Oh,
it's
my
great.
God, it's good.
You were very pro affair with Dennis Quaid.
Well, also then I felt. Yeah, I mean, that's superficial. And this show is exposing, among other things, I think good, you know, I think it's exposing that I do maybe have a problem with superficiality.
With good-looking guys.
Yes. Yeah, well, at least we're talking about Dennis Quaid and not Tom Brady.
That's true. Researching the character and working on the character of Lorraine, because I never realized, I mean, not only how complex it was, but she talks about being a feminist and sort of a complex person, but also from, you know, small town in Minnesota.
Right.
And so it was this dichotomy that she happened to have.
A ballerina.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think part of it is luck, I guess. She had this duality to her personality, which you need to have to play that
part. And
to play like, because it's like sexy and like kind of vampy and adult, but also super innocent and 50s.
Exactly. She had to have some understanding of the misogyny of the time. And she mentions this, that kind of like housewife misogyny that was so a part of the fabric of those times. Like it was just how it was. Mm-hmm. And she was commenting on that in such a subtle real way with that performance. And it's something that's another thing I never, as well as I know that movie, it's something else I never really considered is that, and another reason to love that performance.
Yeah. I thought it was insane what she said, but I believed her completely about what she said about once you have a baby, when she said, once you push a baby out, you can't be a movie star anymore. And you start thinking about it, and it's so fucked up.
Well, you know,
that there's truth to that.
Absolutely. And I've been thinking about it since she said that, which is now several months ago. And I've been talking about that to people, not just actor friends of mine, but trying to find examples where it is not true that when you have a baby that you can continue to be a movie star. And I think actually with her generation, it's much more true than it is now.
Hopefully things are changing somewhat. I think they are.
I mean, like Scarlett Johansson.
That's true.
There are people that definitely go through that. Although
that's true.
I'm thinking of a very good friend of mine, Alison Lohman, who is one of the best actresses I know. We did Drag Me to Hell together. She was all set to be, you know, she could have had her pick of any script in Hollywood. She had two kids and had a very difficult time even, you know, breaking back
in. It's so unfair.
It's unfair. It is really unfair. But I mean, the examples that I can think of are, they were so famous before.
Yeah.
That,
you know. I mean, Leah Thompson, it's hard to fathom going from her performance in Back to the Future and how big of a of a franchise that was, to go from that to, unless she like murdered somebody, to go from that to having a hard time getting a movie, it's hard to wrap your head around.
It is. And she remained, you know, it's not like she lost her looks.
No.
And she proved herself to be a really good actress with Back to the Future. So
I also wonder if maybe she was also a victim of the success of Back to the Future, in that
maybe.
I think sometimes when someone is so identified as like a character, in this case, Lorraine in Back to the Future, maybe it's hard for people to see her in other roles.
Well,
I don't know.
You know, I was thinking that when I was watching Airplane the other day, and Robert Hayes, who was the star of Airplane, I was like, God, this guy is really good looking, and it got a great comedic timing, and he's good, so good in those two movies, Airplane movies. And he didn't do much. He has like a John Ritter quality. He didn't do much.
Yeah, that's
true. Same with Julie Haggerty in those movies. Those were huge movies. And I wonder if you may be right that like they just couldn't escape that role. But Leah does mention that I think that's why Howard the Duck is sort of a frustrating thing for her now, because I think that was considered like kind of a she talks about it. It was a bomb. And
but
maybe,
she says that it made money, but critically it was a bomb.
Critically.
But why should she suffer that much? Even if people, critics hated the movie, she was good in it.
I agree.
And I thought the movie was really good. Granted, I haven't seen it since I was a kid, but
yeah,
I loved it as a kid. It never made sense to me that movie didn't get good reviews.
And then she made Casual Sex, which I know, I could tell you, I could probably, if the box cover of that movie committed a crime, I could draw the best police sketch of it. I know it, but I've never seen the movie.
Oh, really?
Never seen it. But when I was a kid, I was so, you know, maybe I've talked about how I felt about Leah Thompson. And then the fact that there was sex in the title, I know it well.
It's so funny why the cookie monster bothers you, because
yeah, it always
you don't like that he doesn't get all the cookies in his mouth.
Yeah.
But it is ridiculous. I think he gets less than half of the cookies in his mouth when he eats.
Wait a minute. You're joking.
Much less than half.
You're kidding.
He gets none.
Oh, okay. Oh,
that's God,
I got
scared.
I got like nervous.
You thought the Cookie Monster was a real
thing? Like maybe there
was
a hole in the felt or something.
No. I thought you'd be afraid that like it's based on a real character or something.
Maybe I'm too hungry.
I know it's a Muppet.
Maybe I need to eat some food.
But it's funny that bothered you as a kid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That you were stupid as a kid and didn't realize it was a Muppet.
I believed in Easter Bunny until I was in sixth grade.
The Easter Bunny still exists.
Right, right. I believed in
So again, thank you, Mikhail Baryshnikov.
Yeah. Shout out to Mish.
Yes.
It's funny because we call our producer, Michelle Lanz, Mish. And so Mish is now...
But she doesn't body shame people.
No. And she also doesn't like create in the chaos effect of somebody's life. She doesn't create movie stars because of their shaming.
Not yet.
Anyway. No, maybe she does. Yeah. Thanks, Mish. Thanks, Baryshnikov. He's passed on, right?
No. He's very much alive.
Really?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
Baryshnikov?
That's
he still
oh,
he helped train Sam for Fosse Verdon.
I think
I remember him saying that.
Oh,
or he met him in the process or something.
Wow.
Yeah, oh, he's very alive. He's like really healthy.
Like, are you saying he's like really virile?
No, but he's very active. I think he still acts, and he.
You're kidding.
He was in Sex and the City, you know.
Oh, I think I did. I'm proud to say I didn't have that immediately accessible. But
so do you want to? Should we read a?
Yeah. So we're gonna close as we now do with with a letter. Do you want to read that one?
So this letter is from Alicia G. And here is a little portion of it. She says, I love everything that is the wrong size. Teeny tiny elephants, giant paper clips, etc. And while I was living in Whitehorse, I found out that Manitoba has the most oversized monuments and town statues of any province.
That's so cool.
And I became mesmerized with the backstories and names and reasons they were built. So I did my first solo road trip around Manitoba 2 summers ago and saw 27 of the official 65 big things. A week after I got back, they unveiled a new one, biggest turtle known to ever be on the earth. Obviously, I have to do another road trip.
So
and
cool.
Now I'm a super nerd about the whole thing and have several maps of different provinces in Google Maps with layers and links all color-coded. And anytime I hear of a new one, it gets added to the map. If you're not convinced, look up hashtag Alicia and the Big Things on Instagram, and you'll see it's actually a super cool hobby, and everyone not treasure hunting for big things in small towns is missing out.
It is really cool. We saw
it's cool, right?
And yet another example. I feel like on every episode we have a really pretty strong example of why Canadians are the best. Alicia G, that is something I would never have thought to do. But what a great way to spend some time. I love that.
Me too.
So check out Alicia's page and thank you for doing that. And thank you for listening to Life is Short.
And also, if you want to be the next Alicia G,
yeah,
email us and let us know how you make the most out of your life at lifeisshort@wondery.com.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks again to Alicia G and especially to
Leah T.
Ah, man. Thank you, Leah.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
Thank you guys for listening to Life is Short. If you like the show, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and every major listening app, as well as Wondery.com. Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long, produced by Christian Long and Megan Monaco. Our senior producer is Michelle Lanz, engineer is Marcelino Villapando, and it's executive produced by Marshall Louie and Hernan Lopez for Wondery. As mentioned, our dear friend Harmar Superstar does our theme music.
I'm so insulted that you are telling me not to do that. But
I don't even like doing
now. I want to do that. Just
now, like zip lining. Would you do
that? Yeah, I've done
you
it.
Would.
It's fun.
It's I'd be like,
what?
Zip lining.
No.
You hang out the thing. And
oh,
you go.
I know old people.
You
Joanne
would do it.
Did.
I would. Older people do
oh,
it.
Really?
I mean, it's
a little scary.
It's a little scary, but the second you
it's
go on
it,
it's worth it. You're like, oh, it's so fun. It's like being on a slide.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're all strapped in, and it's not...
I'd be a little scared of that. But
you see other people do it.
That, if her dad was like, we're going ziplining, and you're like, yeah, I'm in, and Katie was like, I'm in, I would suck it up
to
it.
Yeah.
That's a scenario where
would you play with monkeys?
You with their genitals?
No.
What do you play with them? Like, catch?
You think of monkeys in that sexual way that you assume them and their genitals?
The way you said it was so sexual, you know, would you play with monkeys?
I was like, would you play?
Play what with them? Checkers? How do monkeys play?
Play around with them. Not
play around with them.
Feed them.
Oh, I can feed them. That's specific. How do you play with monkeys if you don't know them?
They're not good at chess, but checkers maybe.
I meant like, you know, have them jump on you and feed them.
No, it would not have them jump on me. If that's what playing is, then no. I don't play with anybody.
That's how different we are in that regard. That having monkeys jump on me was one of the best days of my life.
You're insane.
It was the best. It was the best feeling. And they smell great.
Oh,
and I was at their mercy.
Full of bugs.
Oh yeah, I was at their mercy, and I loved
that's
it.
That's so awful.
Yeah, but there was an element.
I'd rather do that than skydive.
Duh.
I'd rather slow dance with an orangutan than skydive.
Oh, I would. That's scary.
So skydiving.
No, but a orangutan could lose it and like smash.
If there was
head.
A guy with a dart cut like a tranquilizer right next to us, I would rather do that than skydive.
Really?
Strangers in the I just saw you picture. It's really funny to picture.
And you'd have to know it was trained and everything, not a wild.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd have to be someone trained just to go over to you.
May I have this dance?
Just to learn how to doff its cap. But if what if they that's all they traded and you're like, all right, this doesn't seem so bad. It's like and like and you're like, okay, you go to grab it to dance with
it's like book.
And the trainer's like, oh no, we're not there yet, and it's just like squashes your head like a watermelon.
And meanwhile you guys are like flying through the air like skydiving, it's like such a happy, peaceful way.
And you're like, you get used to it so fast, this is the best feeling of my life.
Oh, it would be God. So scared to go skydive. I would be
like
so scared.
A
but that scenario of everybody about to
zip like
lining, I would do it.
Strangers in the night to dance to with an orangutan.
That was pretty funny.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loureau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.